everybody, and welcome to 500 Open Tabs. I am your host, Kaveh Taharian.
And I'm Hannah Hillam.
And happy Nowruz to all you out there in Nowruz land. No.
Is that what
that's
it's called?
That's just the word. Nowruz land? No, that's not a real place.
I know. Like, we don't call it Iran. We call it Nowruz land.
Nowruz land is where I'm from. No.
Well, okay.
Yes. So Persian New Year, Nowruz literally means new day. So the schedule, I looked ahead for the schedule when this episode releases. Actually, funny enough, I didn't realize this until I looked it up for this episode. Usually it falls on typically on March 20th because it's the first day of spring.
Yeah.
But this year it's on March 19th. So it technically, by the time this drops, it happened last night. Yeah, I think it's because of the leap year. I don't actually know specifically why, but I imagine that's why, because it's all like lunar calendar-y stuff.
So how long does it last? Is it just one night that it's like the celebration, or is it?
So the actual thing itself, it like takes place over the course of a few weeks. The actual New Year itself is on the first day of spring, but then a lot of it has to do with like, there's a lot of prepping involved, and there's a lot of like cleansing kind of traditions that you're doing to get ready for the New Year. And then there's like a post New Year thing that you do.
Vague.
Yeah, it's very, right. No, go ahead.
I do know that last year you posted a picture of you holding some plants. That's literally all I know about it.
Yes. So that's part of it. Yeah. I thought I would start this episode with like a mini tab, like just like a very short, brief. This isn't really a tab that I'm closing. This is just like my own, like I'm just going to word vomit this for a second. A primer so you know a little bit about what it is. And for our fans who are tens of fans who may or may not know, have any exposure to Persian here.
I never knew about it before I met you.
But basically, Persian New Year is it's like a holdover from an old Zoroastrian tradition. Oldest religion. It's like 3,000 years old. It basically lines up with the first day of spring because the spring equinox happens on like whatever, March 19th, 20th, around that time.
Yeah.
And from that day forward, every day there's more hours or minutes of light in the day than there is darkness. So it's seen as like a victory over the darkness.
Oh, cool.
And logically, I think it makes more sense to celebrate spring as the new year as opposed to a random cold day in January. But
yeah,
I'm biased.
Or like the Celts, they celebrate it in October, which doesn't make...
It feels like the fall is what they're celebrating. They're like, we love it when like stuff goes dark and starts dying, which is kind of metal. I kind of like that well. Yeah.
Like,
kind of not judging that, kind of on board.
Everything's dying, and so will we. I think if you live in like northern climates, that's like you kind of have to keep that in mind of like, we're all gonna die just like the trees.
Respect. Hey man, respect.
But I like the idea of doing it in spring rather than January, which doesn't make any sense.
Yes. So Nowruz, the Persian New Year happens in three parts. So the first is Chorshamba Suri, which roughly we just translate to like Red Wednesday. Which is the week before the new year. Actually, no, let me take one step back. It's the plant. So you asked about the plant. So this is the first.
Yeah.
It's not like an official holiday, but there's a lot of different things that happen. So it happens, like I said, in three parts. But before any of that, you're supposed to grow a little patch. Traditionally, you grow wheatgrass, although people also grow like lentil. Like that's what I like to grow because the grass is like thicker and it's a little bit more full. Wheatgrass is kind of a pain in the ass to grow. And the point of this is it's supposed to, you grow it only for a few weeks and it pays off in the third part of Nowruz. But the idea is that as you grow it, it's supposed to sort of like absorb whatever bad luck you've had over the past year.
This feels ancient. It really does feel ancient. Yeah.
It's all, I mean, like we are the original, like, you know, we're all about like the evil eye and cleanse and superstition and getting rid of bad vibes, that kind of stuff.
Oh.
And so the first stage is... The first like sort of event of the new year is Chorshamba Suri, which is Red Wednesday. And then you line up a series of fires and you jump over them and you're supposed to recite this chant. And it's sort of about like, you know, you're taking like the sort of cleansing power of the fire and then you're giving like your sickness and your yellow pallor, all this stuff like to the fire. You're sort of doing an exchange.
Whoa.
Yeah. Getting rid of the bad juju. And then you have the actual new year, which, like I said, varies from time to time. That has its own traditions. That has its own special spread. All this stuff, I'll probably have posted pictures of it on Instagram by the time it comes out. So there's the there's the half seen, which is kind of like your traditional spread of stuff. It's like garlic, apple. All these things like represent different parts of celebrating the new year and starting fresh.
This is really cool.
Those can get very elaborate. They're very cool. And then, of course, you have like a traditional meal, but with your family, and then people exchange gifts and, you know, we see each other and, you know, dance around and have a good time like we always do. And then Cease de Bedar is 13 days after. So Cease is like 13 days after the new year is when you take the, you know, the wheatgrass or the lentil grass, the plant.
Yeah.
And then you take it to like a river or a body of water, anything that sort of like drains eventually to the ocean. And then you sort of tie these little, you know, the blades together and like you sort of make some wishes and then you toss it into the river or the water or whatever. And it's supposed to take it away. And it's,
dude,
again,
that's
it's another
metal.
Symbolic
All of that's
thing.
Metal.
All of it's metal as hell.
The fire. It's like, okay, it's time for fire jumping.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
It is. It's,
man, I like that.
It was great. I grew up around a lot of white people who were very like suspicious of me for not celebrating Christmas. But I got to be like, yo, but check it out. I have this fire ass holiday where we just literally would just jump over fires and shit. And it's cool. And everyone was like, damn, that's awesome. And you get presents
Way
in March.
Cooler.
Yeah.
Oh, so you
it
do.
Kind of
so
vindicated
it's like,
me.
You said it was like a gift giving thing. So like,
yeah.
Whoa.
You get to give gifts and it's a lot of fun. It's great. It's like my favorite holiday by far. It's one I actually believe in. It's one I take very seriously. It's something
cool.
that I've grown to really like, you know, appreciate. And of course my wife is not Iranian. She's Mexican. So I've become sort of the person that's like responsible for it. Yeah. And I've taken it more seriously. And I'm like, okay, this is part of our family. This is part of what we're doing. Although of course, Sarah loves a good theme. She loves a good decoration.
Oh, yeah.
She loves a good tradition, anything. So she's latched onto it quite naturally as well. So we're happy to have her with it. And
it feels like a very natural thing to latch onto just because it is so about the natural elements and like
yeah.
the like very ancient idea of good or dark and light and dark and spring and summer mm-hmm. and winter. And I don't know, it just feels very base in a good way. Like,
yeah, it's like very organic, like, very like
organic
earthy.
And yeah, it feels like one of those things where it's like, wow, that survived a lot of things. And it's still...
Because it's, again, to me, it's like, it makes so much sense. You're like,
right.
This is not rooted in anything other than just like our day-to-day lives and the years and sort of just like the cycles that we experience every year. So I think that's why it's retained.
Right.
And stayed so long, sorry.
Well, and also like we used to just do everything by the season. Like it wasn't like...
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, everything
exactly.
relied on the season. Oh, man, I could talk. Okay, wait. This is really cool. Okay.
It's cool, right? I love it. Well, you're welcome to celebrate it. You can be one of us.
So
we've recorded this in advance so I can give you some tips. So we can start growing.
Okay.
By the way, this is my one flex I get to say now as an adult, which is what I'm very proud of, is like I first struggled with growing. I'm going to like put myself out here and just totally screw it
Do
up
it.
This year before I've even done this. But one of the things I'm most proud of is like my mom. Because my mom used to be the one, obviously, who did all of it when I was a kid and grew the
yeah.
grass and all that stuff. But now my mom looks at me and she looks at my sabzi. She looks at the grass that I grow and she's just like, recognized. Like now she looks at me as like the gangster who like knows how to grow the grass really well.
Yeah.
And she's always like, mashallah, it's beautiful. Like she's always like very proud of it. And I'm like, yes, I'm a grown up. I did it.
I can imagine how important that is to her to be like,
yeah,
you know. Having left Iran and then be like this, we still have this, you know, like it's
yes.
like a very important cultural. Anyway, I can imagine.
Yeah, but
I
surpassed. She's always like, she basically is like, no, you've surpassed my skills in terms of
you're
like,
the king of Norus.
I'm the king of Norus. I'm the king of growing the grass and the lentil and all that stuff. So that's the pictures you've seen, and it looks crazy. It gets like super big.
Yeah,
and I have this like
it's like
fantastic.
It was like tall.
Yeah. And I brought it with me to WonderCon a couple of years because I would like
you
put
did?
In these little duck feet that I have this like little duck
oh,
feet tray
yeah.
that I put it on as part of it. It's like this nice little decor I like to throw on my table.
I've seen that
duck
feet thing.
I had that. We had that at our wedding too.
Question. Really?
Yeah.
You had a lot of things at your wedding. a question. So
yeah.
Is the normal thing to say Happy Norus or is there like...
Yeah. I mean, in English, yeah, you'd say like, it depends on where you're from, but Noruz Etum Piruz, I think is sort of the most safe way. Then you could say Eid Shomo Mubarak. I don't know. It all depends on like where you're from, but just say Happy Noruz if you're speaking
cool.
English, obviously. Yeah.
Awesome.
And we will be excited that somebody knows what Noruz is because that's our low bar of expectation. Be like, you know, our holiday. Oh my God. Thank
that's
you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so happy Noruz to everybody, even though, again, technically it was last night. But Also interesting though, like I had never thought about it, but like just because I think it's because this year was a leap year. So if it wasn't a leap year, I guess it would have the March 20th would have fallen on last night. But because there's that extra day, I think that's what sort of throws it off.
Right. Yeah. The years is, it's all weird, but that's cool. Happy Nowruz.
So weird. Yeah, happy Nowruz. Anyway, so I thought that would probably be a fun way to start the episode rather than our usual, like, what do you want to talk about before we get into my tab? I don't know.
The weather. The weather, I ate this today. Yeah.
I ate a lot.
Well, thanks for sharing. Yeah,
by the
that
time this airs, I'm sure I've eaten quite a bit of food.
I hope.
As you're watching this. Yes, quite a lot. Anyway, I think this week you're first, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you got for us?
So this week I am talking about a tab open called Mother's Little Helper, Vintage Drug Ads. So
okay,
I ended up going to, I had this open for a while, and because I had one point asked, like, I had heard the rumor that housewives in the 50s were all drugged up, right? And I was like, is that true? Yes, was it really that widespread?
This. Yeah.
It is. Very true. And it was extremely widespread. And I went down this rabbit hole of like women's mental health and like where it all started. And it goes way back. Like men have been like, what do we do? Here's some cocaine. Ugh. Like for years.
Have you tried cocaining it?
For real. It's like, have some cocaine, put it on your gums, you'll feel better. And give your kids cocaine, stuff like that. And so I went down this big rabbit hole of like realizing that I would have absolutely been lobotomized in 1945. I would have been lobotomized so fast.
So hard.
Tens of thousands of women a year were lobotomized in the 40s.
Dear Lord, I didn't realize it was that much.
I didn't either. And a lot of it was like on recommendation by their husbands because they were like, this lady's not doing what she should. Also, she wants to work. No, you know, and so literally because in the it was so, oh,
they
no,
wanted
it's
like independence. Oh God,
you know, yeah, because during World War II, women were expected to start entering the workforce since the men were all away fighting.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Alongside that, they were also in charge of making sure their homes were sufficient for their children and that their children were fed and kept alive. And luckily, the government subsidized childcare, which was really new for its time because
which
they needed
continues
these...
to be a good idea, by the way.
Yeah,
dear
maybe
Lord.
We should do it again.
Yeah,
but it turns out it's all rooted in this. They don't want us to, the conservative tradition does not want us to work outside the home. That's a whole different thing. Anyway,
what's that thing that everyone was mad about? Trad wives, right? Was that
trad?
Was that the whole thing that...
Trad wives, dude. Oh, that's a whole other. Have you ever gone down that rabbit hole?
No, I just saw one clip of that girl, that some, I think she was like some blonde girl or something. And I was like,
I don't need
this in my brain. I was like, my brain does not need
what,
this information.
What nonsense is this?
Yeah, I was like, fine. People were like really mad. I was like, I don't give a shit. This is not worth
can't
my time.
This.
I didn't even, I can't. I have too much other stuff to worry about. I can't get into whatever this
can't
is.
Can't think about like trad wives. But yeah, so they were doing all this stuff and they were proud of it. Like, you know, come into the factories, help the war effort. We need you. And turns out they were really good at it.
Yeah.
Women were extremely good at multitasking, at running businesses, at actually like doing the logistics that it needed, that it took to like run these factories and that made things for the war. And so they'd be like making parachutes, riveting planes, like Rita the Riveter?
Yeah, Rosie the Riveter, I believe, right?
Riveter with like the we can do it buff thing. That was
iconic.
Like a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why it's always used as like a women's liberation like thing, because that truly was like the first time women were like, you want us to work? You're going to pay us a bunch of money to work? Okay. But all things must come to an end. Thankfully, the war came to an end in 1945. And the men all came home and they were like, where are our jobs? And the women were like, we're doing them.
They took our jobs.
For real.
They took her jobs.
All the men were like PTSD'd out of their... I love that episode. Classic. My dad showed me that episode way too young. I was like... Because I have like a young parents. So he's like, let's watch Beavis and Butthead. And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, I guess my dad was like 25.
That explains so much.
About me? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Ren and Stimpy.
In a good way, yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... The men get back and they're like, PTSD'd out of their mind, you know, after like, you know, whatever they did over in France or Japan, and they want their jobs back. They want things to kind of go back to normal. And the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, there was one of the largest economic booms in world history. And so there was money, there were houses, there were cars, there was just this wide open world for white people.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. It was for white people.
Flight.
Yeah. And yes. And so you were able to afford these homes. And this began this era of the nuclear family. And so this is another entire thing I went down, and I need to not touch this. Okay. I'm going to try to say this concisely, but I think the nuclear family is ruining the entire world. But that's beside the point. So the nuclear family, we are not built to be in small units like this with a mother and a father, heterosexual with some kids, because we're meant to be in groups, tribal societies, where we have grandparents and aunts and uncles and the community to watch children, help them raise children, educate children. But in the 50s, they're like, women, hey, we'll give you some work to do. You're going to stay inside.
Hold on. To be clear, so you're not saying that the nuclear family is necessarily bad. You're saying that it's not enough.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
At all. And I've been feeling this way for a while, like looking at my friends with kids. You're like,
100%. Yeah.
How are any of us supposed to do this?
Yeah. People are like, the cost of childcare is like insane.
Yeah.
And if you don't have like a parent or like in the kid's case, like a grandparent around to help out, like you have to have like five jobs to be able to just pay for your kid to be taken care of while you're doing one job. Like
one job just to earn the money to keep your job and your place in the workforce.
No, that's literally what, that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
It's like a trade equal trade, you know, one for one trade, which maybe I'll do the nuclear family later.
No, you're preaching to the choir. Again, just real quick to bring it back to, you know, the culture that I come from, and people are like, of course, like your aunts and uncles and cousins and like parents are around all the time. You want to murder all of them all the time because they're all up
all
in your business and they drive you crazy. But like it does require that.
I come from I'm from Utah, and it's very similar where it's like, you're surrounded by family at all times. You can go over to a cousin's house down the street.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Take the bus to your grandma's house after school. Like my mom had a full-time job. My dad had a full-time job. I was at my grandma's house, my cousins. It was just very different from how my kids are being raised, because there isn't that kind of insular community anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bummer. It's really sad.
It is. And like you said, you want to kill everyone. And you're like, I hate all these people. But then when you don't have them around, you're like, ooh, maybe I love them.
Yeah.
Maybe this is great. So this is in contrast to the extended family model that most of the world uses.
Yeah.
Where you have multi-generational households living in the same house. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I have to stop myself from keeping talking about this. I'm feeling myself spiral into this. Okay. Point is, we went hard on the nuclear family in the 50s. Everyone's like, this is the way to do it. This is the only way to do it. It's the best way you can raise kids. And so expectations of women like skyrocketed. Suddenly women were like, okay, go back to the house, have this great family, and do everything. And so women became the launderers. They became the maid. They became the cook. They became the mom. They became the sexual partner. They became the emotional rock. You know what I mean? Like these things. Just boom, here's your new job. And you have to do it alone. So reading about all this, I'm like, oh, I would 100% find any sort of drug that could help me do this. And which
you're
I'm
like, this
also
is a great story. This is definitely not making me want to go insane.
Well, no, it made me realize like, oh, we all still do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, on some level, probably. Sure.
100%. I'm getting talking really fast. Let me slow down a little bit.
That's okay.
Anyway,
I'm following you.
So the magazines, the ads, the conservative like social expectations were really being pushed in advertisements. It's like, look at this shining white blonde woman happy in her kitchen, you know, slender, making a beautiful pot roast for her blank-faced husband. And so it's like, here we go. And it's putting put on you constantly. And so these women were finding themselves completely worn down. And have you ever read an old National Geographic?
Yes. Not for quite some time, but Nothing comes to mind, but I do remember reading all the old, actually probably not the 50s, but I definitely remember looking through like 70s National Geographics when I was in high school, because they had them like in our library and stuff. But probably not to the extent that you're talking about. No.
I live in a city where there's a bunch of old people who die all the time. And mm-hmm. so the library gets all their National Geographic donations, and I am there. Like,
that's awesome.
I go when the library opens, because that's where the 1930s and 40s ones are.
Whoa.
And I'm in this weird silent...
No, I've never seen one from the 30s. That's super cool.
I found one from 1920.
Whoa!
Yeah. It has... I'll have to show you. I'll bring it to Emerald City, because it's...
Let me see it.
It's like the new washing machine. It's like a woman in front of this gigantic, and there's like ads for like tuberculosis treatment. It was like fascinating.
Use cocaine.
Cocaine for everything. And then it's like a whole article about a white dude completely ruining a native's like indigenous like Alaskan's land.
He didn't like the cocaine that we gave him, so we shot him.
Now we own the Arctic. But these ads in there were nuts in the 50s. They'd sell like vacuums and dishwashers to women, and they'd have like these testimonials like, my life's easy and my husband's happy. But to the men, they were all these just like watches and pens. And weirdly enough, dress shoes made of kangaroo skin. Kangaroo hide. Yeah.
Why kangaroo hide? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Just a thought. Continue.
I think they outlawed it, obviously, because I've never heard of that. While men were like skinning kangaroos and putting them on their feet, women were being told we were getting lobotomized. There was some kangaroo murder. It was insane. The world was our oyster.
Wow.
So if you can picture this, I'm going to do this to you again.
I love it.
23-year-old woman in 1945.
Perfect.
What's your name? Nora?
My name is... Let's do Betty. I'll be like Betty Draper.
Betty.
I'll be Betty.
Betty's a good one.
Yeah.
Your name's Betty. You're 23.
Hi.
Put that transatlantic accent on.
Yeah. Well, how you doing, sugar? I don't know why I'm Southern.
I mean, maybe Betty's Southern.
Yeah. She can be.
And
why not?
Betty, mm-hmm. as an American Betty. Woman, helped mm-hmm. your country to victory by welding ship hulls. Let's say that. Like, you just welded ships together. Not together. You know what I mean?
Together. Yeah. That's why we didn't win the war and we needed to drop the nuclear bomb, because all our ships were welded together. They couldn't leave.
One big line of ships.
FDR's like, what are we doing here, guys? What are we doing?
Why do women do this?
Yeah, that's why Patton was great. Right. Patton came in and he was like, we need to separate these ships. And they're like, he's a genius.
I remember that speech he gave.
Yeah.
Separate these ships. It's iconic. Okay. So... Betty, you just got done riveting airplanes.
Ships together, yeah, right.
Welding ships to each other. And your true love, what should your true love's name be?
My Frank? True love's Frank, yes.
Frank, Franklin. Betty and Frank.
Yeah,
Frank. Betty and Frank. Frank, your true love, is coming back from war, and he's like scarred and psychologically destroyed from like freeing a Belgian village or whatever. And the economic boom... is going, and he's got like money, but he's insane. And you and Frank get married, and you buy a nice 3-bedroom mid-century modern home in
for like
the $14. Suburbs for like $17. Speaking of National Geographic ads, the ones for like the homes, it's like, this is $5,000, and it's like, kill me.
I hate it so much.
Yeah. Yep. We're all going to work till we're dead. Oh, there it is. I brought it up. Okay.
Bury me until the boomers are dead and that we can finally buy real estate again.
That's not going to happen. Okay.
They'll live forever.
So you and Frank get married, Betty.
Yeah.
And
Frank.
You find this lovely, lovely house in the suburbs. And before you know it, it's like the 50s and you have 3 kids, right?
Beautiful. What are our kids' names?
let's see. I'm going to do this because this is easy. They were always named like Jennifer,
Chet.
And Sandra and Chet.
Sandra and Chet. Is Chet the middle child or is he the youngest or is he's the old? Okay. Chet's the boy.
Sandra's the oldest girl and she's just the
overachiever.
She's a second mother, pretty much.
Exactly. She has to take care of the other two kids.
Chet is the boy who's angry.
Roughhousing all the boys.
And his dad's always like, play more football. And he's like, but I like dancing, but I'll never say. And then the youngest girl just gets forgotten. Youngest girl, Jennifer, is just like eating lead paint somewhere in the house or something.
Yeah, she's kind of strange, but, you know, whatever. She's blonde at least.
The good old days. Anyway, so you have these kids and do you remember the factories, remember the ships and 10 years ago when you were like, had this
things
big purpose and
agency,
No, you don't remember it.
Oh,
it doesn't matter anymore because now you're a mother and a wife and a maid and a cook and an emotional guide, all of it. And that's all that matters now. So you can imagine how much of a bummer this was as the years go by. And
I can imagine in my sleep, I'm trying to rivet these children together like the chips.
Get in the ocean.
I'm sleep riveted. So anyway, you're basically, you've had to forget about your past and just continue
just
your role
like,
as a mother.
This is my job. No alone time, nothing. You got to be everything for everybody.
Yeah.
Almost like it still is like that.
Oh my God, I was gonna say.
I just rubbed all my mascara all over my face. Just like an insane housewife.
You're like.
So you live in this neighborhood with everybody else that's also doing the same thing. And your kids can play with each other. That's honestly one of the better things about this kind of a living situation because there's always someone's like watchful eye, you know? Your kids can run free. Eat lead paint at other people's houses, different kinds, you know? Get the full
this
spectrum
lead paint's
of lead paint.
A little
paint.
Bit spicy.
Ooh, I like Timmy's lead paint.
Yeah, Timmy's lead paint was great.
There's some like
it has
asbestos
butter on it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you're doing all this, and then one time you're at your friend Anne's house, and Anne is perfect. And Anne throws these dinner parties that full of like Jello with meat in it and stuff like that, and beautiful food, a beautiful spread, and you overhear your husband Frank asking Anne's husband how she does it and how he's jealous of Anne's cooking, and you're sitting there exhausted, dead tired, thinking I'm the worst. Frank will only like me if I can cook better. This is not projection. I promise. Okay. I don't cook. and how well behaved their kids are, and she hears all this, and you hear all this, and suddenly you're like, I'm gonna throw this meat Jello at the wall. I'm so angry. Yeah. And so you go home and you're like, how am I gonna be like Anne? She's perfect. She smiles, she's happy, she's good with her kids, she's patient, she's, you know, skinny. Mm-hmm. Skinny. And that's what really matters too. These women want skinny women. And you wonder why it's so hard for you. And so finally, while you're mopping and cooking at the same time and like putting gravy in a Jello tin or whatever they used to do, you're seething because your husband's like checked out, reading the newspaper, staring.
Also, he's got PTSD, like has no idea like how to exist as a normal person, and is probably a severe alcoholic.
Like, definitely cheating on you for sure. They all did.
Oh, cheating, yeah, for sure.
At the office, looks vacantly through you whenever you talk to him. Anyway, so you finally just give in and you're like, I have to ask Anne how she does it, how she's so skinny and perfect and her kids are great. So you go over there and you're like, Anne, how do you do it? And she says,
what do you do?
I'll tell you how I do it. It's a little thing called Benzedrine.
Oh,
and
shit.
It's a miracle. And Benzedrine is an amphetamine. It was a very early amphetamine prescribed to mostly women in the 1950s to help settle their nerves, quote unquote. It was a better than lobotomies. So everyone was like, this is great. And usually it was by word of mouth of like, oh, here's how I do it. Here's how I'm doing it. You should ask your doctor. And it was kind of like this like
viral marketing that way.
Yes.
Or word of mouth marketing.
Word of mouth marketing. So regular.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are these ads.
In menopause.
So there is this really popular one. And it's pretty much meth. And it helps with me hanging out. Let me find these. My gosh,
Ritalin.
I put an old Ritalin ad in there for you.
Yes.
So there was these ones. you can see, like, this one says, now she can cook breakfast again. Mornadine. When you prescribe Mornadine. And there's, like, this woman that's just, like, prodding at a pancake in a nightgown. And she's
smiling.
She looks
like she's using that griddle, like, about to use it as a weapon.
She might. These smiling women who are finally happy. This one says, you can't free her. You can't set her free, but you can help her feel less anxious.
This is an interesting picture too, because she's biting her nails and she's hiding. She almost looks like she's in prison behind, like, I don't know if this is deliberate. I think they accidentally, it's like behind a broom and a mop and a duster.
And an iron. And she's sitting there looking anxious. And it says, you can't help her, you can't set her free, but you can help her feel less anxious. And so all of these...
that's them acknowledging that, like, your wife is a prisoner, but...
Well, because at the same time...
She's your prisoner, and she better not be a bummer.
She better do this with a smile on her face.
Yeah, on her smile. Come on.
Yeah, so these uppers, these Benzedrine and things like that, got people to actually... They would be able to stay up later, so they would be, you know... sexually available and willing to, you know, fulfill literally everybody's needs with a lot of energy and pep. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women who were depressed would get on these because it actually, I mean, as we know now, I'm medicated for ADHD and it absolutely helps me do literally anything. Yeah. And so same. I can imagine being on a high dose of meth would have done the same thing. And so besides those ones, if you were anxious, there was another drug for you. And those were benzodiazepines. I'm sure you've heard about benzos before.
Yeah.
And these ones were very widespread. They were tranquilizers that were meant to calm somebody down. So if you think about, like, the typical Stepford wife, like, blank stare, like, that's pretty much what they would look like. They'd be kind of, they'd be chill and down for anything and happy and not fussing, not making a big deal about stuff. And men loved it. And so some of these were, you know, you've heard of Valium.
Yes.
And then there's Atarax. There's Miltown.
Atarax? I've never heard of Atarax.
Atarax. They don't use it anymore.
It's not like Adderall.
No, it's Atarax. I don't know what it is. It's a downer. But this Miltown stuff was really popular. And I don't know why it's called Miltown. It sounds stupid, but they would give it to women. See, this one of the things it says, this ad says for Milprim, says in the menopause, transition without tears.
And it's a picture of a woman. It's like an older lady. She's standing at like a buffet almost, it looks like. And there's a couple of dudes around her with cups on saucers. And she sort of, again, looks like she's ready to murder everybody. But maybe that's just projection. I don't know.
No, I think she was. But yeah, she's smiling. And she can actually, you know, be pleasing to be around if she does that. There's one that says pregnancy can be made a happier experience with Miltown. Mm-hmm. Turns out it caused birth defects and early.
Great.
Miscarriages and late term miscarriages. Really
Dear
horrific
Lord, no.
stuff.
Yeah.
And there's all these accounts of these women who were put on it on the internet. Like, they've come out and been like, here's what it was like for me. Awful. Oh, a lot of it was pressure. A lot of it was husbands. A lot of it was male doctors kind of misleading them about what it is, being like, we're going to put you on this. It'll help you. And there's no real like information given. And so there was a lot of medical abuse and misuse of these medicines. And they were popular for a while up until the women's right or the women's liberation movement. Mm-hmm. When women were like, we kind of want to work and we kind of want to have like because people started realizing, right. We want lobotomies again. That's what I'm going to do. Fifth wave feminism is going to bring back lobotomies.
But it's my choice.
It's my choice to get a lobotomy. Do you ever wonder how nice it would be, though?
Occasionally, I do think about what it would be like. Not because I think it would be nice, but just as like a fascination of just being like, what is it like in the first person? Like, how do you think? Do you just not? Right. I don't know enough about it. So it's like, do you just not have thoughts? Like, I don't actually know anything even remotely about how lobotomy makes you feel on the inside. I know what like the outside effect is when you see somebody, but like, internally, like what's happening?
You just kind of don't like there's no extreme emotion to anything. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, you're agreeable. You don't worry too much about things. Things don't, there's no complex worries, if that makes sense. Mm. Like,
yeah, I don't. I feel like my entire identity would be gone if I didn't have complex
worries. It is, yes. No, same.
Just having such heightened complex worries all the time, constantly. As I'm saying this sentence. I'd be like, who am I without being worried? I don't understand.
That's my identity, being mentally incapable of handling things.
Yeah.
Anyway, so these tranquilizers, benzos, were extremely popular because they would also give them to kids. They would give them to everybody, but like 75% of the prescriptions were for housewives. So yeah, what ended it was the women's lib movement of the 60s. Women weren't happy to be relegated to one role. And they wanted to have fulfilling careers and go to college to actually get degrees and not just to meet somebody who can provide for them. That coupled with there's an economic dip in the 70s wherever, you know, it couldn't last forever. That 50s
inflation
boom.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah, it's going crazy.
The 70s kind of dipped and then women were kind of forced back into the workforce. And that golden age, quote unquote, of the nuclear family kind of came to an end because there's no way you can live in a capitalist society which requires you to pay rent and have one parent at home nowadays. And then also in the 70s, women were finally allowed to open their own bank accounts without...
I always forget about that. Yeah.
It's insane.
You're like, what?
Like, husband, may I have my own money, please?
It hurts my brain.
Yeah. It makes no sense. Like,
it doesn't make sense.
No. No. Yeah. Turns out we're like people, you know?
And not even that, but I'm like, even from like the capitalist, like hyper, like you need to make money perspective, like by and large, like women spend more money than men do by and large.
Yeah.
Like because of their role, because of like their access to stuff and just having to like think about it. So it's like, why would you not market like everything to women all the time? Like, I truly don't understand it. Like, if you're just like, I'm not to like make money, why? Why wouldn't you? It doesn't make sense.
They figured it out. They figured that out pretty quick.
Yeah.
And that also, they have to get their own bank accounts, and birth control became way more widely accessible. And for the first time ever, women could be like, I'm not going to have a kid.
Yeah, I'm going to work.
And that pissed,
and I'm gonna have my own deal.
Pissed a lot of people off. And we're still seeing the ripple effects of that today.
Yeah, continues to. Yeah.
Which is normal. This always happens when there's a huge societal move toward a different like ideology, there's going to be pushback for a while. There's a bunch of waves of feminism and they all, you know, we all fight amongst ourselves. But then also another thing that ended it, we all realized meth was bad. Meth isn't good. And other drugs are better. And meth ended up getting really addicted to these housewives. Their lives would fall apart, or their children would be on it and their lives would fall apart. And they was associated with degeneracy and like weakness because they couldn't handle their meth.
Yeah.
And
toughen up.
Get over it.
Toughen up with your meth addiction and depression and lack of purpose.
Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and be a white man.
Yeah.
It's easy.
It's clearly they were in a good place too.
Okay.
Just push it down. All of it.
All of it. All the way down. Never think about it. And then take it out in anger on your children.
Perfect.
Anyway, it's super sad. As you can see, the drug epidemic is still extremely difficult and hard to see. And it's happening all around us. And a lot of people who are overdosing right now are women with children because this didn't stop. They're still...
No, I was just gonna say I didn't realize specifically that women led men cases, and it was mothers.
I don't think they lead them in deaths. They lead them in use, though.
Oh, like, in
there
use.
Is
okay.
A lot of use of painkillers, and men tend to become more addicted, and hospitalized for it and die from it. Yeah. Women tend to Anyway, and there's still just a lot of, and almost every, if you notice like antidepressant ads on TV and stuff, they're all directed to women. It's always like this sad mom, like sitting by a window, and the husband and kids are like, what do we do? You know,
what do we do? Mom's sad.
Mom's sad. Let's give her drugs.
Let's give her drugs.
And so still they still market.
Unless you need drugs, in which case.
Yeah, I do.
Take them. Yeah, we're not. We should be clear. We're not drug shaming. We're not saying that people should not be on medication if they need to.
I was going to bring up, like, before I had kids, I was depressed, been depressed since I was 14. And then I had kids, and then I was like, oh, this is a different depression. Interesting. It's like another layer.
There's another level. You leveled up.
Yeah, like I had postpartum depression, and I was like, oh, finally I'm back to regular depression. Phew. Like, once I got that out of the way, I was like, good, I can handle regular depression.
You're like, this I got. This I have experience with. This is
it. Well, and then another, sorry, I'm hopping around. ADD.
Okay. Would you like some meth, Hannah?
Yeah, actually, I'm already on it. So, actually, I don't think Vyvanse is meth.
I don't think it's meth. No, I think Ritalin's methylphenidate. Technically, none of it's meth, but I think.
Right. It's all from the branch off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Shoot. What was I saying?
You were talking about how ads are now marketed towards moms
marketed
and
towards
women and
moms
stuff.
And women and things like that, which is, here's the thing. It's a misconception. Men are also sad. It's just that we haven't given men a very safe environment to express that sadness without emasculating them, which is a whole other thing on its own. Everyone's sad.
it's not even that they don't have a space for it. It's like we don't even give as a man in this conversation.
Seriously.
Who's no, I'm joking. Yeah.
This is good.
I think they don't even teach you necessarily like the language to be able to identify what it is in the first place. I mean, I'm lucky because I grew up with like a huge family of women. So like
you were socialized by women.
I was socialized in a way that was like, it's very different. But you talk to other guy or I would, you know, sometimes when I talk to other guys who were not necessarily exposed to as many, as sophisticated of a vocabulary of being able to like identify certain things and express them. You're like, how is the internet? Like, oh, I guess you just never were taught.
Never learned.
And never learned at any point. And then they're more frustrated because they don't know how to even identify what it is that they're feeling in the first place, let alone be able to say that it's depression or something. It's just like, why am I punching holes in the wall? Because I'm angry. And it's like, no, you're not angry. You're disappointed. And that's, you don't know how to express it. That's why you're punching holes. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. Like, it all comes out in rage.
In rage.
That is one thing we have on you guys is a lot longer of a history of being emotionally supportive of each other. And I think had to. And I think now that it's kind of turning around, like finally, I hope we can have some sort of like, I got all serious. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Serious like time for men to finally be able to like have those words and learn those. Anyway, it's pretty crazy. And I just realized the time. So I'm going to wrap this up. I just wanted to point out that things are changing. Even though most times if a woman and a man are both working outside the house, the woman still on average does more of the housework and childcare as the man who has the same amount of time. And that's just society.
I've heard that before. Yeah. Yeah.
It's society. It's hard to, we've caught up with our minds, but our habits have not. As a society, and we're getting there. And then I saw this like this statistic that said in the 1980s, half of fathers had never changed a diaper.
That's insane.
And then I know millennials, only 3% of fathers had never changed a diaper. So that's self-reported. So but still better.
I'm not even a father, and I've changed diapers before.
Wait, really?
Well, I have
I guess
and
you have like niece and nephew.
Because I'm part of the extended family of like my sister and my brother-in-law and stuff. So like I was there when they were born. Like we're lucky that we all live in the same town.
Well, that's
so,
another
like,
thing
I
that's
was,
like
I was there when they were really little
it.
And I would help what I could.
And that teaches, you know, like in evolutionarily, that's like that now I am better suited as a father because my someone will change
me.
Exactly.
100%. It's taught me. Yeah. I'm like, it's not like a foreign. I always think about that where I'm like, I have a little bit of a primer for it now.
Yeah.
Where like I've sort of seen what it did to my sister, or my brother-in-law and the sleep, the non-sleeping. And then like, you know, like you, it's not the same thing as experiencing it firsthand, but even just, you know, peripherally being around that sort of family and seeing it is like, okay. And I sort of have an idea. It's not like what they put on TV necessarily.
No. To wrap it up, I wanted to talk about the Rolling Stones song. Have you ever heard the song Mother's Little Helper? by the Rolling Stones.
I don't know if I have. No, what record is that off of?
It's all about, I don't know. Hold on. It's all about Valium.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it's all about, some of the lyrics are just solid. So, yeah, some of the chorus or part of the song goes, things are different today, I hear every mother say. Cooking fresh food for her husband's just a drag. So she buys an instant cake and burns a frozen steak. And she goes running to the shelter of her mother's little helper. And she helps her on her way and gets her through her busy day. And the whole song is this. It's pretty much just like, things suck for women and they need Valium. and I was like, oh, I did not know any of there was an entire song by the Rolling Stones about Valium. Not Matt.
Leading the way, speaking up.
Yeah.
Assuming it's an older song, right? Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's from the 60s.
Okay. I don't know that one, surprisingly.
I didn't either. And then when I listened to it, I was like, this is a good song. Nice. It's really good. You should listen to it. And then one more thing. I found this video called The Relaxed Wife.
Relaxed Wife.
I found this video while I was reading about all these different drugs. And it's from 1957. And it's like an ad for... Atarax, that one of the uppers, or sorry, one of the tranquilizers, and okay. It's called The Relaxed Wife, and it's like a 15-minute ad of this husband who's just, oh, he's so annoying looking. He's all like, oh, I can't handle anything, I'm so stressed and sad, and his like doped out wife his doped out wife's like, all you have to do is take Atarax, and then she like teaches him how to relax, but just by giving him medicine. So if you guys want to laugh, watch The Relaxed Wife. It's wild.
Maybe we'll put that in the show notes. We'll link to it.
It's, yeah, it's truly
like...
Is it
like, just like it's something on YouTube?
Yeah. You can find it on YouTube. It and the guy is so... Oh my gosh, I can't look at him. It's supposed to be comedic, but it's kind of creepy. So yeah, that's my... Okay. That's a lot of housewives were on drugs for good reason, and we still are.
Yeah. It's quite... It's heavy. It's heavy.
It is heavy, and it bummed me out. I mean, obviously it bummed me out because it's like still things like this happen all the time, and we have a huge drug epidemic because of these like companies back in the day that were like, this will work for everything, and it turns out it was just straight meth and whole generations of... Anyway, it's it's dark, and I'm glad I'm a woman right now.
And childcare, that's the other thing where you're like, it never changes.
It never changes.
They want to take away tax credit even for like...
Do they really?
Having a child. Yeah. I mean, I think they tried to, or they did. I don't remember what the last... Anyway, it's not great.
No. Yeah. Sorry to bum you out.
No, it's you're not responsible for how this all happened. It's...
Oh, really?
Other forces. Yeah. I mean, unless you passed all this legislation and made it happen, in which case I am upset with you. You please don't do that. But
I'm a congressman from the 50s. I don't know if you knew that.
Have you tried cocaining it? That might work.
Just rub some cocaine on it.
Hey there. This is Adreed Kava, here to give that poor little guy host Kava a break. Hannah and I would like to ask you for help by going to nebula.tv/500opentabs and signing up for Nebula, where they have exclusives like Why Our TVs Wanted to Kill Us in 90s Movies by Tech Alter. Ever notice that 90s movies were obsessed with evil media? Shows plunging societies into ruin, video games that trap and torture players, and VHS tapes that kill anyone that watches them? What caused this sudden obsession? These kinds of wonderful video essays never cease to amaze me. I had to get a master's and go countless thousands of dollars into debt. But you kids now? You can get an annual subscription to Nebula that gives you the same insights for the cost of a carton of eggs, at the time of this recording, probably. You can find this video and dozens of other high production originals on Nebula, a video streaming platform built by and for creators. And along with videos and podcasts, you can now learn new skills in Nebula's fully produced classes. Go to nebula.tv/500opentabs and get 40% off an annual subscription. By signing up, you can support other creators like Maggie Mayfish, Princess Weeks, and many more. Remember, sign up at nebula.tv/500opentabs. Otherwise, Hannah and I will assume you hate us and will cry, much like host Kava is doing right now from not being allowed to talk for a whole 2 minutes.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, thank you for your tab.
Yeah.
I enjoyed listening to it. I also enjoyed seeing you have a laughing fit. That was very fun.
I cried. I cried out of laughter. Thanks. Your turn. What do you have?
Okay. My tab is a New Yorker article written by Louisa Thomas, and it's titled "How Nikola Jokic Became the World's Best Basketball Player."
Interesting. Okay. Right. Never heard of this guy.
So I figured you had probably not heard of him. Yeah. He's a player for the NBA.
Oh.
So nice. I debated on this because I was like, you know, first of all, I'm afraid of sports fandom because frankly, that's like the original toxic fandom of insane people.
It's war replacement. It's like, we can't kill each other. So
you got the stats wrong. Like, I'm going to murder you for like, and I'm like, I don't want to, I'm not like, trying to do this.
I'm glad we replaced tribal war, but like,
right.
It's still scary.
So I didn't, you know, full disclosure, like if you're like a sports person, like this is not for you. This is not like a sports thing. Like, yes, it is about an athlete who happens to be arguably the most, like who's the best athlete in this sport right now. But I was also just thinking, I was reading this article and I was like, man, I feel like Hannah would just think Jokic is really funny because he's really ridiculous as a human being. And I was like, I feel like you would love him. So okay. I was like, all right, I'm going to take a shot here. I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to try and do one that's about. So I'm going to try and explain to you his story and then sort of the context of what makes him so interesting as a basketball player without going too far into like a triple double and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not going to get into like all that part of it.
Kicking it through the goalposts.
Yeah. I'm hoping that by the end of this, you're going to love him and you're going to do for the NBA what Taylor Swift did for the NFL with all your thousands and millions of fans, because you're going to start going to Nuggets games and people are going to be like, oh my God, did you see what Hannah was doing? Hannah was there.
She was picking her nose during the fourth quarter. She was wearing a black dress again. What does that mean? What sign is that giving us? Is she going to release a new album of her just yelling?
Releasing a book in October.
Oh my gosh. And she
comics. It's
nice plug. Thank you.
There you go. I'm always thinking about it.
Did you know I played like junior basketball?
Did you really? How old?
Yeah. I was 11.
That's so
cool.
I played for the
junior jazz. They call it junior jazz because the
junior
Utah
jazz. That's really fun.
And I was the shortest person on my team and I never played, but it was really fun. Yeah, it was fun because I mean, my friends were doing it and my friend was like 5'10" for like an 11-year-old. And so it was fun to watch her. Anyway, I like watching basketball and I did play it for a minute.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you had I assumed you had, I don't know why. I guess I assumed because you've never talked about it ever. So I didn't know that you
I used to
had,
play
like, any
sports
interest in it.
A ton until the internet came into my life.
Basically never told me this, which is hilarious. This is the first that I'm hearing about this. Told me anything.
I was on the swim team. I played softball. I played soccer.
Oh my God. Look at you.
And then I found out that you could code your own websites. And so I stayed inside after that. And I made a Lord of the Rings fan website. And I never played another sport.
Okay. Well, it's good to know you've got a little bit more, you're a little bit more familiar with this than I need to be, which is good because I probably overprepared and wrote too much for this, but
continue. I want to hear this.
As I always say, I'm like, people talk about like, oh, they're like, people are explaining and talking down. I'm like, no, I'm the opposite where I just assume that because I don't know what's going on half the time that I don't want somebody else to feel bad. So I overtell them because I'm nervous and I'm like, I don't want you to feel bad if you don't know something. So I'll just explain everything in the world to you so you don't have to feel worry about looking dumb.
You were socialized by women, weren't you?
Yeah, right. Anxiety. Anyway.
Worrying about everyone's feelings.
Worrying. Okay, so Nikola Jokic, so his nickname is the Joker, not because he's like a jokester, but just because his last name is spelled J-O-K-I-C, and like one of his teammates was like, oh, I don't know how to say like Jokic, so you're just Joker now. And so people are like, he's the Joker.
Jeez.
Doesn't make any sense. But he is hilarious, but not because he's joking around. He's hilarious because I'll get into it. Okay. So okay. He plays for Denver, which are the Nuggets, which is in Colorado.
The Nuggets?
That's the Nuggets, right. The Denver Nuggets. Yeah.
Because of the gold or whatever.
So, but he's originally from Serbia. And in Serbia, he grew up in a cramped two-bedroom apartment in Sombor, and it housed three brothers, two parents, and one grandmother.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's basically just short of 7 feet tall, by the way.
Dude, those Eastern European countries make some tall people.
Seriously, especially in that area, too, like in Serbia and stuff. They're all huge. So you can imagine what that's like, having like three brothers who are like 6'5", all living in like a two bedroom apartment. And apparently their dad was also huge. I think Nicola is the tallest out of everybody, but they're massive, just like a massive family living in big men living in like a tiny apartment, but they were close. And he grew up with two older brothers, and they both were very good at basketball. One of them like kind of was on his way to becoming like a professional in the States, but he came and like met some other dude that was close to them in their town, and who was sort of like he sort of was up to no good and like didn't take it seriously. So he sort of burned out like a little bit.
Aww.
And they're also a few years older than him. I think they're about 10 years older than him. So he basically grew up with like these like semi-professional basketball player older brothers who just like mercilessly like kind of like were big brothers and like beat the shit out of him and like harassed him.
Oh, as like an older stuff. Sounds about right.
Yeah. And they all loved basketball. And in this little like two bedroom apartment, they all played like full contact basketball with like a little indoor hoop.
That sounds insane. Okay.
It is. And you know, I apologize. I tried looking up the names. It was like harder to find a proper pronunciation guide for all of them, which I usually like to do, but so his brothers' names are Strahinja and Nemanja. Again, I apologize if it's wrong, but they were very aggressive with their kid brother, but they were also protective of him. Basically, like, you know, a bunch of crazy boys. So Nicola has, this is my favorite. Nicola has spoken fondly of a day when Strahinja threw knives around his head because he refused to climb a tree during a picnic.
That's the most older sibling thing I've ever heard. It's like, I'm going to end your life if you don't do this.
Yeah. Throwing knives at his head. He's just like, man, I miss the good old days of having knives thrown at my head.
Okay.
So at this time, so he's younger. He's born in 95. So he didn't watch any, again, because we're old now at this point, don't forget. So he's born in 95. He didn't really watch any games because of the time difference, because it would have been like 4 a.m. or something at the time. But around the time that like YouTube became a thing, he became obsessed with watching clips. So he was watching all these clips of like Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, which I thought was like, what's his full name? It's Lerald, probably. Lerald Bird.
Lerald Bird.
I think it's just Larry, but I was like I just think of like when you think of Harry, it's Harold. So why wouldn't he be Lerald?
Oh, I want him to be Lerald.
Anyway, so he basically watches these guys. He becomes obsessed with them, and he becomes obsessed with like studying them.
Yeah.
And it sort of starts to cement his skills in the game. And of course, don't forget, his older brothers are like, they're dunking on him. They were professionals. They're throwing knives at his head. He's watching YouTube.
He's got to dodge those knives.
He gets really good. Yeah. And he's like playing in these young people leagues, and he's doing very well despite his frame. And so this becomes a thing that's like very unfortunate, but like it's going to be a thing that they keep making fun of him for like most of his life, is that he's like, and this is the NBA, by the way. This is not like progressive politics where they have like, you know, they don't have very like forward thinking ideas. They're just like,
merciless.
This fat kid. Yeah. They just keep calling every article is like, this fat kid from Serbia grew up to become a champion. Man, he was so fat running around being fat. Why is he so fat? Every article.
Fat.
Merciless.
Poor guy.
And they're fat shaming him constantly. But the whole thing is like this is part of what's like so funny about him, is that like he doesn't look like a regular basketball player the way you think of them, of being like shredded and big and buff. He's sort of like this weird, and like I looked at the picture of him when he was like 10 or 11, and I'm like, that is exactly how I looked when I was 10 or 11. Just
hold
like
on, I need to see this.
This weird, like your body fat is distributed in a very strange way. Like you haven't grown into your body yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh.
Right? That's what everyone thinks.
Oh. Oh, he was just an awkward big kid.
Yeah, he's just an awkward big kid. But he's really good at this time. Like, he's really... It's the one thing I keep seeing, like, in all the articles that people are like, he's a high IQ player. So it's like he's probably a little bit more cerebral than everybody else is the way they're playing. So it becomes interesting because he's somebody who ends up sort of compensating for the fact that he's not like jumping 10 feet high like Jordan and like flying. And he can barely like, and he like runs out of breath. So he's just, so he has to sort of use his head the way he plays. So it becomes really, yeah, he develops these skills. So this is the part that you're going to love. So around 13 or 14, right? He's balling. Things are going well. He's starting to get noticed and he's showing potential. And then one day he falls head over heels in love.
Okay.
With horses.
Okay.
He's absolutely just infatuated, like obsessed. He's the most horse girl you've ever seen in your life. Just he's the absolutely biggest horse loves girl. Them. He's the biggest horse girl.
Wait. And okay. All right.
It becomes this obsession. Mean? Yeah. Okay. So I'll tell you what it means. So it becomes this obsession where he loves horses, and it's not like he's not just like, oh, I want to go to the track and like race them. He's like obsessed. He's like, no, dude, like I want to take care of them. Like I want to scoop them, like scoop their poop up. Like I want to brush them. Like just loves horses, like has bonded with them in this way. Yeah, he's sort of like this big sweetheart.
Aww.
And this is my favorite quote. And they ask him, they're like, what do you love so much about horses? And he goes, I like the smell of them. The best feeling ever is when you feed them.
That is the purest thing I've ever heard.
I know.
It is the best thing ever when you feed a horse.
Yes.
They're so happy.
So
I love this man.
He's a horse dad, like a horse rent, so, like a shoe rent. I don't know. Like what?
Horse dad.
A hoof rent.
Yeah, horse dad.
Horseshoe.
He's a hoof boy. No, hoof that boy. That sounds like
that
it could be
sound like a weird something sex else. Term. He's a horse dad. Let's just call him that.
He's a horse dad.
He falls in love with horses. And he's like, yeah, I don't care about basketball now. Like, bye.
What?
He like hangs up the Jordans.
No. What?
Hayden Christensen's it. He's like, I'm going all in on this horse thing. I don't care. I just want to like take care of these horses. I want to like clean up after them, make sure that they're happy, feed them, be with them, race them, whatever. And his dad is like, dude, you're like this like amazing basketball. You can't just go be with horses. Like you could be like in the NBA. Like, what are you doing? And his brothers are like, are you insane? And he's like, are you insane for not loving horses? Yes, I think so. He's like, have you pet a horse? Have you fed them? It becomes this whole thing. Aww. It becomes this whole thing back and forth.
He's like 14, right?
Yeah, he's like 14 or something around this time. Yeah.
Sweetheart.
And so his dad eventually just comes up with this plan. He's like, okay, listen, Nicola, I'll make you a deal. If you become good at basketball, if you keep going with it, you can make a bunch of money and then you can buy your own horse. And he's just like,
good money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Goods and services. Yeah. So he's like, you son of a bitch, I'm in. I'm going to play basketball so I can buy horses.
Become the best basketball player of modern time so I can buy.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my opinion, I think this becomes like the crux of his entire career is this bargain that he makes with his dad. And the way he thinks about basketball, it's almost like he's just like a blue collar guy who wants to just buy horses. Like he has a regular job, which is a basketball player. So it's sort of like, okay, I'm a barista during the day. And then at night, I'm going to like work on my writing and my stories, or like I'm going to be a bartender at night so I can like be an actor during the day and pursue my
passion.
So
I'm going to be like a professional basketball player so I can have horses.
Literally, yes.
I'm sorry. You were right. I love this person. This is all I needed to hear. And you know what? I don't like horses, but I love that he loves horses.
But you love that he, this is what I figured. I was like, whether it's cats or horses, but I'm like, there's something funny about this where he's like, it's just very endearing.
Yeah.
So, but it gets better. I usually say it gets dumber, but with this guy, it gets better. It gets more fun.
Oh. So
he comes back to the game and he's playing again and he's real good. And he gets recruited to the Mega League in Serbia, which is like a big deal.
Yeah.
And he starts playing with some of the best kids in the league, and he's good. And but he's a good player. He's a smart player. But they notice that, like, he gets tired very quickly. And he kind of wipes out, like, after the first quarter of these games. And they're like, dude, he can't do a single push-up. He can barely jump. Like, what is happening? What is going on? Why is he so, like, whoa, there's something that's incongruent. It's not working out. And so they do this investigation, the coaches do. And they're like, why is he so sluggish? And it turns out our boy was, there's this thing called burek, which is a Serbian pastry. So it's like spanakopita, where it's sort of like phyllo dough and but it's got like meat and cheese and all this. He was just going to town, just
housing
eating.
Like, him.
And these things are like calorically dense. And he was eating those and then drinking sometimes up to like 3 liters of Coca-Cola in a day.
No. His bones are probably like brittle.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And granted, he's big. He's like, you know, I don't think he's hit his full growth spurt, but he's still very large. But even for like a large boy, that's a lot of calories.
He's living the life I want.
Exactly.
That's all
and so
I want.
They sort of intervene and they're like, okay, like you need to kind of scale it back. And he doesn't quite break the habit right away. And it becomes like this meme with him where they're like, maybe you need to scale back with the Coca-Cola. Like, I've seen a lot of people online where they're like, it's game day. It's time for me to make burek and eat that because he's playing.
That's really sweet. Okay. Oh my gosh.
So he's, again, I'm projecting, but he's just like, listen, you got to stop eating the burek and drinking Coca-Cola so that you can become a great basketball player so you can buy a horse. So he's just like, I got to put this aside so I can move forward.
He doesn't do it for the basketball. He does it for the horse.
Yeah. Absolutely not. And this is my other favorite story is that he gets really good. And in 2014, he gets drafted. Now, obviously, I'm sure you've heard like the draft. Anytime there's a draft, whether it's like football, basketball, whatever, it's televised. It's this big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And depending on when you're drafted, I don't know if you're being facetious or not. Again, I can't tell. I tend to like over-explain to people. You don't know this. Okay, good. I don't want to over-explain to you if you already know.
I knew about drafts, but I didn't know that people were like watching it on TV.
Oh, people get like super into it.
Wow.
Because all kinds of like deals can happen last minute and they get switched around. And so it's like ranking and then trade. Anyway, it's like a big gambly, big thing.
Kind of feels like a market.
Kind of, yeah. It's literally what it is. So in 2014, he's drafted, but he's not drafted like number one or number 10 or number 20 or number 30 or even number 40. He's literally drafted 41st in the league. So not just nowhere.
No.
Basically, like by the time his name comes around and they're announcing it. And again, the draft is televised. They have to cut to commercial. And they cut to commercial, and it's a Taco Bell commercial for the tortilla filled with delicious beef, chipotle sauce, cheese, and rice. The quesarito.
Yes. I just got so excited that was this Taco Bell's involved. I love this whole story.
So I'll show you the graphic. So it's literally like they're showing the ad for the quesarito. And then like on the bottom of it, like they're like, by the way, Nikola Jokic is drafted by the Denver Nuggets, like in this little tiny crawl on the bottom of the screen. So here's
okay, so
the,
yeah. Send me
we'll
the...
put it up on the screen.
So it's a quesarito. And underneath it is... the little bar that has like his name and Serbia and like the draft like stuff. This is amazing. If I were him, I would be like, yep.
Yeah. No. Okay. So if you're him, you're like, you'd think, a normal person would be like, I'm very upset. Like I've been dishonored, like all this stuff. Nope. You know why?
Why?
Because he's asleep. Because he's in Serbia. And he's like, I'm not staying up for the draft. I'm going to go to bed. I got to go like play with horses in the morning. I don't have time for this.
There's a story of his brother like calling him and just being like, dude, you got drafted for the Denver Nuggets, aren't you excited? He's like, huh? I'm asleep, and just sort of like hangs up. Speaking of another marketing campaign, if they ever bring back the quesarito, if Taco Bell does not like recruit him to be the spokesperson, that company needs to be shut down forever, because they are the dumbest idiots of all time. This is like pun intended, a slam dunk. This is a layup. This is the easiest thing. They should bring it back just to have him be the spokesman for it.
Or the sportsman, but yeah, no, you're 100%. He should ride in on a horse.
Ride in on a horse!
And speak only in Serbian about the quesarito.
Amazing. That's perfect.
You're in Hollywood. You could do it.
I could do it. Yes. I'm going to go. Well, I have to go to Denver to recruit him first. But so he packs up his things and he goes to Denver, which I kept thinking in my head. He's listening to Goodbye Horses as he's leaving.
Okay.
Anyway, he's playing Goodbye Horses. He's sad, but he comes with his brothers and his girlfriend. And they move to Denver and they repeat the cycle. They get like a little apartment, and like all four of them are sort of living in the same space, which funny enough, sort of to your point of what you were talking about in your tab, like this, I think, ends up being part of why he becomes like grounded, is because he's living with his family and with his girlfriend and they're all sort of sharing the same space, which is admittedly like tight, but that's sort of what they grew up with, and like that's what they're used to. So like to them, it's just like it's fun, it's whatever, it's chaos. Like that's what makes them comfortable.
Why wouldn't you bring your brothers, who you live in a tiny house with you when you move to Denver? Yeah.
So
100%.
They're all still, I'm assuming, like throwing knives at his head every night, and you know, whatever, beating him up, playing video games, just doing like the typical thing. So it was tempting to get into like every like specific thing that happened with him and how his career has developed, but I'm gonna try and keep it brief and sort of give you a brief overview. But I think he's really interesting because he and you'll see why I think he's similar to how you and I think about stuff.
Okay.
So of course, first there's the diet element, which he's still kind of like drinking a lot of Coke and eating like deeply fried foods and stuff. So that sort of like he teeters with that king behavior. He's dealing with that. He struggles. He eventually sort of like hits the gym and starts lifting weights and gets into it. It's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight. So like the best of us, it's hard to let go of some of your favorite foods, especially when they remind you of home, especially when like a new country and all that too. But as far as like his position's concerned, he's a center. So how much do you know about a center and like what the role of a center is and stuff?
If I can remember correctly, it's like kind of a more major role, right? Yeah,
I mean, center is, you can think of it as like it's a center of gravity almost. It's like it's typically like the biggest guy on the team. Again, there's people who have played it in different ways and not everybody's the same, but just broad strokes of just sort of oversimplifying it is like, it's usually the biggest guy on the team. They sort of hang out under the basket because they're the tallest and the biggest, and they can sort of grab the ball, and then they feed it out to other players, and then they take the more long range shots. So typically a center takes the more short range shots, and then the guards and the wings are the ones that are outside around like the 3-point line and further out. They're the ones that are taking the bigger, longer shots. Okay. Vast oversimplification of it, but that's generally what a center does. So Shaquille O'Neal is sort of like the person that everyone, like from our generation, like he was the most famous center, like huge, terrible at like shots past, you know, like directly under the basket. But
good at being tall and dunking.
Good at being tall and dunking, and his size, like, you know.
What was Michael Jordan? I was too into Beanie Babies to notice.
Michael Jordan was literally everything, right?
Oh, was he? You could literally say anything to me and I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But Jokic doesn't play like a typical center. Because he grew up in Serbia, and the Serbians apparently, like when they teach them basketball when they're younger, they sort of teach them this philosophy of like, you need to play every position regardless of like what your size is. So basically it's this really interesting thing that builds on another. So essentially he's like a generalist. So he can play point guard. He can play like the forward. He can play wing. He can play center. He knows what all the different roles are and like how each one of these people play those roles. And because of that, he has become like this really unpredictable player where like this like 7-foot guy who will like shoot a 3-pointer. And people are like, wait, what? Like a 7-foot person doesn't do that. That's not what anyone does. And it's, to me, I think about this as like, okay, well, you and I are sort of like that. Like we're generalists. Like we don't really hyper-focus on like one specific thing, but it's an advantage when you sort of know what, how everything else functions.
Right.
And even though you're not necessarily like the best at it, you have a broad understanding of all of it.
Yeah. It's like a jack of all trades, but with like basketball.
Yeah. No, literally. Yeah. Like all these different positions.
The reason we have this podcast is we really like a lot of different specific things, but nothing.
Listen, Nicola, if you're listening to this podcast, you are welcome to come here anytime and talk as much about horses as you want to. We would love to have you whole time. We'll bring up horse tabs. It'll be great.
Yeah. I'll try to like horses more. It'll be great. It'll be good.
So you pair this.
I like the idea of them.
Oh, the idea of horses, the concept. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. So now I was about to say the idea of horses. So you pair this with, he has what seems to be some insane vision. Like he has really crazy peripheral vision and like can see very far. What? So he's like this weird Hawkeye thing that people are like, how does he see so well? Again, I see this as like a fellow, you know, person insane who just focuses on like insane person who can see and hyper focuses on everything going around them.
All the noises, so, all the colors, all the sounds.
All the noises, all the colors, everything that's happening on both ends of the court. So because of this, he sort, and because he knows kind of what everyone's doing and like what they're up to, and he knows like what their jobs are, he's become this like very prolific and bizarrely creative passer.
Oh, and cool.
What's interesting is that if you watch him, this is the funny part, is that if you look up videos of him passing or even shooting, he looks like he's about to fall over at any given moment. Like he's so awkward the way, and I mean awkward comparatively to like, normally you'd have like, oh, Kobe Bryant like has this like perfect swish in like form. This guy looks like he's picked up a basketball for the first time in his life and he's throwing it. It's the most bizarre thing you'll ever see.
I'm excited to watch.
And it just goes like, it's like a swish. Or he'll do this like passes where like he looks like he forgot that he had the ball in his hand and like it slipped out. And then suddenly it's like on the other side of the court and his teammates like dunking it in. And it's become this whole thing where like everybody's like, what the hell is this guy doing? I have no idea what's happening. And yet like everything he does seems to be like this weird anticipation about like where someone's about to be before they even know that it's going to happen.
He's got like a superpower.
Yeah. And again, he's not like jumping high. He's not like dunking like all huge and like flying in the air. So he just sort of is like, yeah, I don't know. I'll just like throw it this. Again, it looks like you're throwing it away in the trash, like something like behind him. And it ends up being this pass. And it's totally confused everybody.
All he's thinking about is horses. It's like whatever gets the job done.
Goodbye, horses.
Yeah.
Sometimes he does this like volleyball tap move where somebody will pass to him and he just like swats it like it's a fly. It'll go to this other person and then that person will be like, cool. And then they'll shoot it. So what ends up happening is that he has this like crazy ability to elevate like everybody around him on the team. So now
all be ready.
They're all ready, but they're all like cool. Like, cause usually the way that a lot of people play in the States is like, I have the ball. Like I'm the center. I'm the genius. Like I'm the hero. I want to dunk it and take my shot and have my moment. He doesn't do any of that. He's just like, I don't know, whatever. Boom. You take this. Oh, you do this. Oh, you're setting up for this. So it's really interesting to watch this team over the course of a couple of years. Cause they've all sort of realized that. And they're like, okay, he's going to feed everybody. He's going to like take care of them. By the way, there was another article that I read that I'm not going to get into, but there was somebody trying to be like, what's the theory about like Eastern European and like Serbian players being so good. And like, why are there so many of that are dominant and like so good in the league. And somebody had this theory that they were like, well, they grew up in communist in the communist country. So like they're thinking about like the will of others and they're not necessarily thinking about the individual. So it makes them very good team players.
It turns into communism actually kind of works in that one way.
Yeah. They're sort of deferential in that sense.
Yeah. Because it's not about individuality. It's about how to lift the entire community up.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It's just like it's about scoring the most amount of points. It's not about you being the best. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
And then one more thing I'll say, this is the last technical bit that I'll talk about, but I thought this was really crazy because somebody pointed out, or I guess there's like a theory online that people talk about where they say he sort of is like a water polo player, but on the basketball court.
Oh, interesting.
Which, again, the Serbians and the Eastern Europeans, just absolute beasts, so good at water, like they dominate at water polo. Wait, they're excellent. Really? They're really good water polo players. Yeah, they're big. They have really long arms.
Right.
They're in the water a lot. Whoa. So, which is funny when you go and watch him, like the way he holds the ball and he palms it with one hand, he holds it a lot of times like he looks like a water polo player in the water.
What?
And so he's done this thing that he sort of popularized. So yeah, so they're like so apparently like a lot of kids would just play when they're younger. So he probably just like played a bunch of water polo when he was a kid, and it sort of seeped into his brain, and he's like, oh, this is sort of like water polo, like it's a ball, I'll do this, whatever, fine, sure.
And it worked.
So he's like this very weirdly creative guy where he's just like pulling from all these different ways that like other people aren't thinking about. And he's just sort of like approaching it in this very like practical, like, this is my job. I'm just trying to get as many points as possible to win these games. And again, a little bit of, I wouldn't say inside baseball, inside water polo, I should say. So one of the crazy moves that he does is normally when someone gets a rebound, the first thing they'll do is they'll sort of pass it off to a player that's right next to them when there's a turnover, and then you dribble the ball and then you come to the other side of the court team is setting up like different plays. What he does, which is very common in water polo, is like he'll take the ball, and if he sees somebody on the other end, he'll just throw it one-handed all the way across the court.
That is water polo.
You've seen this before. Yeah. Like in water polo players, that's what they always do, because they look for the breakaway and then you come and then you fake the goalie out and you shoot. He just does that. And so it's really bizarre. It's unlike anybody else I've seen.
I want to go watch a video right now, but I can't. But I want to watch one right after because I'm fascinated to see this.
Yeah, I thought I would send you the video, but then we'd end up watching it for like 10 minutes. And there's so many. And by the way, my YouTube algorithm has been like radicalized into thinking I'm only going to watch all NBA clips. Admittedly, I watched a lot of them.
That's so, like me with 9/11.
Yeah, exactly.
I watched two 9/11 clips, and now it's like, do you want to see this whole story about this person losing their leg? And I'm like, I just want to watch Ryan Gosling sing the Ken song. So yeah, my YouTube algorithm is Ryan Gosling and 9/11. So
that's pretty good. Sure. So I'm gonna bring it back to a hint of fun fact. Jokic seems to get scratched on his upper arms more than any other player in the NBA.
Why?
By the end of each game, his upper arms are covered in claw marks, some deep enough to draw blood.
What?
In 2019, he told ESPN, "I lead the league in scratches. I'm always bleeding. I'm used to it."
Okay, wait. I gotta look. I'm looking at pictures. What? Why? Who's scratching him?
I think he's just like, I don't know. He's just like
tall and in the
he's
way
just and tall and just bumping into people and doing his thing. Here's my other favorite thing. So there's this guy
insane.
He is. There's this other guy, his name is again, I apologize, I think it's Miško Raznatović. So he's the basketball scout that was in Serbia that brought him to the mega league. He's sort of the guy that discovered him and like kind of gave him his big career.
Okay,
so Jokic doesn't do a lot of press that much for reasons I'll explain in the next portion.
I think I know.
Mostly
it's
because
just
he
who
just
he
doesn't
is.
Want to. Right. He's just like, I'm not really into this. So a lot of times the press will email this guy. And for reasons that like no one can explain. And I've seen interviews with him. He's like a very like well put together, like slick, handsome guy. And he's like a businessman. He's like very cool. But for whatever reason, he responds to emails in all caps. So every time people will ask him a question, he writes it back in like half broken English in all caps. So
like
it looks
by, like
he's
a
screaming
or something. Yeah. Just like I'm the basketball raccoon. Why is that the only thing I could think of? Like a raccoon writing in all caps.
That's how it feels. So like the response was, I have no real explanation besides the fact that his skin is very sensitive. So I'm going to go to the last section, which is like a couple little quotes from him. So he says they asked him after they won the title, because Denver is like the top seeded team and they've been killing it. So they asked him.
Oh, are they? I didn't know.
Yeah. They won last year and they'll probably win again this year. We'll see.
I only know about the Golden State Warriors.
The Warriors are good, but they're not as good because Jokic is he's the beast. Like he just kills it every time. He's real good. He's really fun to watch. But so when he first got when they first got into the playoffs. Right, because normally if you don't make it to the playoffs, your season ends earlier.
Okay.
So they're like, oh, once you got into the playoffs, they're like, is it the most fun you've had since you started in the NBA? And he goes, no, I think it's actually the opposite. And they're like, why? And he said, because we played an extra 2.5 months.
This guy, it's all a means to an end. He's just like, this is my job.
All right. This is my favorite clip of him. I'm going to send this to you because you have to watch this.
Okay.
So after he won the championship and he kind of couldn't get out of it and he had to do his press conference. Actually, don't read the caption. Just open it.
Okay. Okay.
So they're like, so before you watch it, they're like, okay, like, you know, you won. It's like a big deal. Are you really excited? There's going to be a parade for you on Thursday. Basically, they're going to like throw a parade in like the team's honor.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And so they're like, are you excited? Like, how do you feel? So normally it's like, you know, I'm going to go to Disneyland. Like I just won the Super Bowl, et cetera. But like, watch this clip. It's quick.
Okay. So I'm curious what you are feeling right now. And if you're looking forward to a parade coming up in Denver.
Men's parade. Venice parade.
Thursday.
No. I need to go home. Okay. I mean.
Venice parade? Venice parade?
Venice parade?
Thursday? No. I need to go home.
he buries his head in his hands. He's so upset.
He doesn't even hide that he's deeply disappointed by this news.
I have to go home to my horses.
I have to go home.
I have to, which I'm like, how many times have you felt that exact? I'm like, this is perfect.
All the time. Yeah. He's like me. I feel like I am like a kinship.
By the way, follow up to that. He did end up going to the parade and he got drunk and had a good time. And he was like laughing and he eventually succumbed to it. But
it's always how it goes. You're like, I don't want to go. And then you're there and you're like,
I want to stay home. I'm already under my blanket.
Glad you made me go out kind of thing.
Or he's a really good actor. I don't know. But there's all these clips of him being like, no, there's all these clips of people being like, are you excited? And he's like, no, I did my job. I'd like to go home now.
I love him.
He's a total meme within the NBA. So I'm going to end this story on a happy note. So to find him at his most comfortable, you have to follow him back to Sombor, which was the city that he was from in Serbia. And you have to meet Dreamcatcher, which is the racehorse that he finally purchased, fulfilling a childhood dream.
Dreamcatcher.
And they ask him about it.
That
and
makes
he says,
you want to cry.
He says, I buy a friend. If they ask him. And he says, he doesn't talk, but we can talk, you know?
This man is a gem.
He's a gem.
He needs to be protected. I love him.
This is the last little fun fact. He says, when he's at home, he still cleans the stalls at a friend's stable. This man is an NBA champion, and he still
Not
cleans the stall
his
for his
own...
friend.
Okay.
When they asked him what he'd be doing if he weren't an NBA player, Jokic said, I would be a stable boy. With the utmost sincerity.
What a solid man of the people right there.
He's great. I feel like I didn't even do it justice to try and explain like the playing, but it's really, he's so fun to watch. He's so like, I'm like, yep, he's not going to make that. And you're like, how is that a basket? How is this a thing? It's like, it's always keeping you on your toes. Oh, and then also, by the way, every interview that I watched with like people in the NBA who played with him, the first thing they do is start laughing. They're like, what do you think about Jokic? And everyone's sort of like, we don't know what to do with him. They're like, he's the strangest person.
Here's my new theory. My new theory is he's a time traveler and he accidentally stepped through a portal. And everyone's like, you're tall, play basketball. He's like, I just came from the horse stables back in 1635. What's happening? And all he wants to do is get back to the stables, realized he could make a lot of money and not die of the plague. And so he stayed.
I mean, more or less. Yeah. It's all he's doing. He's motivated by something greater than basketball and glory. It's just about horses.
It's incredible. That almost brought tears to my eyes when he said that he buys a friend.
Yeah.
They don't talk, but they talk.
He's great. Bless anyway, him. So that's my sports tab.
Dude, I was not expecting sports from you, but that was a human story you just told me.
That's I figured.
I love him.
I figured you would. I thought you would love him. I thought you'd get a kick out of him.
A very feel good. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like dad, I know you're listening, but like a little bit like my dad, where he's just like, I'm unbothered. You know, like, I'm going to go do my thing. And I walk outside. I'm like, where's dad? And he like built a chair. I'm like, what? like my dad has a desk job, and then he goes home and like builds an entire like bench or a chair, that kind of thing.
Like, yeah, your dad would love it. He's like, his day job is basketball, and then he just goes and takes care of horses.
Yeah, does what he wants. Starts running a farm. Yeah. Wow. Cool. Thanks. I never knew nothing about this guy. So I love this.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Now I can actually talk about basketball with people.
That's the other thing I figured is like, if you ever see a Nuggets game that's on in the background, you can be like, where's my friend? And then you can watch him play.
Horse boy.
He looks like
what do we call him? Hoof boy?
I don't know. Horse dad.
Horse daddy.
Horse rent. Horse daddy.
Horse daddy.
That seems a little bit different.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my tab.
That was delightful.
It was nice, right? Okay, yeah. So let's go ahead and queue up our tabbies to close. What do you want to? What should we sound effect this one with? Mm. Is it the sound of like people just downing a bunch of pills? It's a horse. It's got to be a horse.
No, it's a horse. It's a stampede of horses.
Stampede just of horses.
Stomping on the tabs.
Okay, I love it.
Like big old battle charge.
Perfect. You want to count it down?
Yeah. Hang on. I got to get ready. Where's my... Okay. Ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Close it.
Close it. I actually have two of those.
I'll be the horse. That sounded like a ghost or something.
Horse ghosts.
Spooky.
Oh, all right.
That was
moving
such a feel-good story. I loved that.
Yeah. Happy Noruz, Hannah.
Happy Noruz, Kaveh. Here's to being a woman in the 21st century and to that guy with the horses.
The Joker.
The Joker.
Jokic.
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 So since I went first, should I go first with listener
mail? Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
So we're moving on to listener emails.
Yeah. Okay. So today, this one I'm reading from Natalia from Brazil. This is our first.
Oh, right. We got a fan in Brazil.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I almost said, oh, never mind. I don't know how to speak Portuguese. Yeah. So she says, my name is Natalia. I'm from Brazil. And my tab is something I've had open since 2021. The reason I keep it open is because every time I am in a bad mood, this tab never fails to bring me a bit of joy. Oh. It is a review of the only Michelin starred restaurant in the town of, I think it's Lecce, Italy. Okay. The restaurant is called Bros, which should be the first red flag for anyone. Even if you welcome to Bros. Even if you are not used to reading restaurant reviews, I highly recommend this one. I consider it a less of a review and more of a description of what it feels like to slowly realize you are trapped in a movie made by David Lynch.
Okay.
In fact, you probably came across a picture of one of the dishes on the internet, a weird foam served in a plaster cast of the chef's mouth.
What?
Oh, I looked at this. And
that sounds highly unappealing.
Click on that link. And she says, how can it not bring a smile to your face?
What?
So these people, this link, they go to this restaurant and they have like a 30-course meal. And each plate is like two things.
Ew! This is disgusting.
Did you see the one?
Why?
I don't know. It's Michelin star. But look, it looks like a turd. It looks like a turd covered in cinnamon as the first course. And then what looks like oysters with like phlegm. And then the main course is a tablespoon of crab.
I'm just looking at the mouth one.
The mouth one is
wholly unappealing.
It's seriously like almost like sexy mouth. You know what I mean? Like it's like slightly parted lips. Like porno mouth filled with foam.
Yes, if that's what you want to call it.
It's disgusting. Natalia, this is amazing.
Dear Lord.
I kind of want to go eat there.
The meat droplet course? This just looks like...
Well, there's one...
This looks like bacteria growing on like soup.
Well, there's this one they bring to the table that's like, here's rotting ricotta cheese. And they're like, oh, what? For sure. It's not rotting. And they're like, no, it's rotting. It's rancid. And they serve them rancid cheese.
This is awful.
It's
this looks terrible.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why anyone would. Did you see the one that looks like a squid head or something?
Yeah, that's the cuttlefish it looks like.
Oh no,
looks it's like a marshmallow flavored like cuttlefish.
Oh, it looks like frozen an alien air. Fetus.
The best is all the pictures of the people eating at the restaurant, and they're just like,
nobody's happy.
They're all like Jokic. They're all like, I can't go to the parade. I can't eat at this restaurant. I have to go home.
So we'll put the link in the show note or the show thing. What is it called?
Show notes. No, you had it.
You can the article itself is really funny. So go and read through it. It's clever and funny and disgusting. So thank you, Natalia.
Thank you. Obrigado, Natalia. The second listener email is from Mackenzie from Santa Rosa. Mackenzie writes,
hey, neighbor.
I love the idea. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I love the idea of this podcast. I always have open tabs to random things I look up on my phone. Right now, there are 65. Those are some impressive numbers. This inspired me to read and close a tab whenever you have an episode.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. Today's choice was the Wikipedia article for Shave 'em Dry.
Oh, no.
You can see where this is going. Sorry, Mr. Hellam. It's probably best you don't listen to the rest of this listener email.
He's listened to worse. That... Just me and my brother talking. It's worse than this.
Oh, okay. Sure. Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. He's like, it's nothing new. Shave 'em Dry, a song by Ma Rainey recorded in 1924, 100 years ago. The title refers to slang that meant sexual intercourse without any preliminary lovemaking. There's definitely no chef's mouth with whatever, like the brown jizz that's in it. Just dry.
You don't know that.
Yeah, that's true. We usually think that, quote, dirty or vulgar songs are a modern invention, but there have always been raunchy songs. They were just more underground. That's true.
Right, right.
One version goes,
oh,
I got
no.
Nipples.
Oh, no.
You ready for this?
Yeah, Dad, maybe like.
I got nipples on my titties big as the end of my thumb. I got something between my legs will make a dead man come. This is like some Megan Thee Stallion shit. This is awesome. 100 years ago. Amazing.
100 years ago. Wow.
They're just going with it. It makes you wonder if one's great grandparents were aware of this song.
I guarantee.
Yeah.
They were not aware of it.
They were not aware.
No.
Anyway, wow. Mackenzie, thank you. That was amazing. Just seeing Hannah's reaction to that one line was worth it. Anyway, I guess that that takes us to the end of the show. We went a little bit long today, but you know, we had an extra mini tab of Nowruz and stuff. But
that's okay.
But thank you guys for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast. As always, please go and follow sponsor links. Follow us on social media at 500 Open Tabs. Follow us on Discord. Oh, I forgot to say, going back, if you have an email that you would like to submit, we would love to hear about it. Please send us your closed tabs, 500opentabs@gmail.com. That's 500opentabs@gmail.com. Let us know.
It's so fun to read.
We love it. We've been getting more and more, which is good, but it's still not enough. We need even more.
Enough.
More is never enough.
Kylo Ren gif, more.
More. Let us know. Something, just a quick anecdote, quick little thing that you thought was fun, include the link and let us know again where you're from. It's so exciting to hear that somebody's from Brazil. That's fantastic. We love hearing that. It makes us feel connected. It makes us feel like we're not just a nuclear family of a podcast. We're an extended family of a podcast.
We're an extended family. We can all help take care of each other's tabs.
Exactly. anyway, yes. Hannah, would you like to let people know where to find you, etc.?
Oh, yeah. I'm at Hannah Hillam on Instagram and everywhere, actually.
Everywhere.
I will say I'm on Facebook, but it's under Verbal Vomit. I forgot about that. That's my old blog's
name. That's a good name.
Yeah. That's where I first went internet viral on my old Blogspot blog, Verbal Vomit. But Facebook, look at me. Facebook won't let me change it. So it's Verbal Vomit on Facebook and Hannah Hillam on everything else.
All right. And I am at Covetarian on Twitter. I increasingly check it less and less. I am on Blue Sky. And of course, I'm at Permafriends on Instagram. And obviously, if you guys get a chance, join us on our Discord. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
I did finally get the link working, and then we have all the links linked through our Instagram and stuff. So you can go sign up there. And of course, so many people don't seem to know this, but yet again, we are on YouTube. Full episodes on YouTube. Go look us up on YouTube at 500 Open Tabs on YouTube.
You can
full
watch
video.
Kaveh react to that mouth with foam in it. You can watch him scream into the microphone.
Every week. Sorry, Alyssa. Thank you. Thank you to Alyssa for making my screams sound less Wilhelm and more myself.
Aw. Alyssa's the best. She's great. Hi, Alyssa. Thank you.
Wonderful.
I was also going to say I do a live drawing stream every Saturday. Sorry, not every Saturday. Every Friday at noon Pacific on Twitch, Hannah Hillam. I'll draw stuff. We have a lot of fun.
I am also doing a competing live stream at noon on Twitch. At Hannah Hillam, but like the H and the A are spelled backwards if you're typing too fast, so that all the people that are trying to get to you will go to me. And all I do is look
we'll
at Hannah's.
Hannah Hillam. Hannah.
And I just watch Hannah's Twitch and then draw twisty mustaches and devil horns on all of her drawings.
You gotta come really on as a guest sometime.
I should do it. Yeah, I think that'd be fun. Yeah,
and
we'll
do
it. We'll make that
exact
happen.
Thing. Okay.
Yeah, anyway. I'll be like, bad drawing. Here, it needs horns and a mustache.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Keep it. Oh, what did you say earlier? You said we're all here to take care of each other's tabs.
We're an extended family where we take care of each other's tabs.
Dear listeners, right? Take care of each other's tabs.
Yes.
Keep it Josie. We love you.
Keep it Josie. Yeah.
Happy Nowruz. We'll see you next week.
Bye.